Radio Krishna presents Stories from the Mahabharata, or the History of Greater India.
Today's show is entitled The Pandava Brothers in Exile in the Forest. The five princes of the Pandu line were exiled to the forest after losing a game of dice in which they were cruelly tricked by their evil cousin Duryodhan. Meanwhile, Lord Krishna was away protecting his kingdom of Dwarka. As soon as the news of the slaying of Shishupal by Krishna reached his friend Shalva, he became very angry and besieged Dwarka with a mighty force. Krishna, having not yet returned to Dwarka, old Ugrasen was in charge of the defense of the city. The sieges described in the Mahabharata seem very much like those in wars of present day. Dwarka was a strongly garrisoned fortress built on an island and well provided with means of defense. Ample barracks had been provided, and there was an ample supply of food and weapons, and the garrison included many illustrious warriors. For the period of the siege, all the bridges were demolished and ships were forbidden entry into ports in the realm. Iron spikes were planted in the moats around the fortress, and the city walls kept in good repair. All entrances to the city were guarded with barbed wire, and ingress and egress were strictly controlled by permits and passwords. Thus, no arrangements were neglected that could further strengthen the city whose nature was already made impregnable. The pay of the soldiers was increased. Volunteers for service were rigidly tested before being accepted as soldiers. The siege was so rigorously pushed that the garrison suffered great privations. Krishna, when he returned, was struck to the heart at the sufferings of his beloved city, and he compelled Shalva immediately to raise the siege by attacking and defeating him. It was only afterwards that Krishna learnt for the first time of the events at Hastinapur, the game of dice, and the exile of the Pandavas. At once he set out for the forest where the Pandavas were living. Along with Krishna went many, including men of the Bhoja and Vrishni tribes, Drishtaketu, the king of Chedi country, and the Kekayas, who were all devoted to the Pandavas. They were filled with righteous indignation when they heard of Duryodhana's sinful acts and cried out that surely the earth would drink the blood of such wicked people. Draupadi approached Sri Krishna and, in a voice drowned in tears and broken with sobs, told the story of her wrongs. She said,
I was dragged to the assembly when I had but a single garment on my body. The sons of Dhritarashtra insulted me most outrageously and gloated over my agony. They thought that I had become their slave and accosted me and treated me as one. Even Bhishma and Dhritarashtra forgot my birth and breeding and my relationship to them. O Janardana, even my husbands did not protect me from the jeers and the ribald insults of those foul ruffians. Bhishma's bodily strength and Arjuna's Gandhiva were alike of no avail. Under such supreme provocation, even weaklings would have found strength and courage to strike the vile insulter dead. The Pandavas, my husbands, are renowned heroes. And yet Duryodhana still lives. I, the daughter-in-law of the Emperor Pandu, was dragged by my hair. I, the wife of five heroes, was dishonored.
She stood trembling, utterly unable to continue, for the grief convulsed her. Krishna was deeply moved, and he consoled the weeping Draupadi. He said,
"Those who tormented you will be stricken to death in the bloody quagmire of a lost battle. Wipe your eyes. I solemnly promise that your grievous wrong shall be amply avenged. I shall help the Pandavas in every way. You will again become the queen. The heavens may fall, the mountains may split in two, the earth may crumble, or the boundless sea may dry up. But I tell you truly, my words will stand. I swear this."
And Krishna took a solemn vow before Draupadi. This vow, it will be seen, was in perfect accord with the purpose of the Lord, who declares in the scriptures,
"For protecting the righteous and for destroying the wicked, as well as for firmly upholding religion, I appear on earth age after age."
Drishtadyumna also consoled his sister and told her how Nemesis would overtake the Kauravas. He said,
"I will kill Drona, Sikandin will cause Bhisma's fall, Bhima will take the lives of the wicked Duryodhana and his brothers, Arjuna will kill Karna, the charioteer's son."
Then Krishna took leave and returned to Dwarka with his sister Subhadra, who was also the wife of Arjuna, and their child Abhimanyu. Drishtadyumna went back to Panchala, taking with him the sons of Draupadi. In the beginning of their stay in the forest, Bhima and Draupadi used on occasions to argue with Yudhisthira. They would plead that only righteous anger befitted a Kshatriya, and that patience and forbearance under slights and insults were not worthy of him. They would quote weighty authorities and argue vehemently in support of their contention. Yudhisthira would firmly reply that they should abide by the promise they had made, and that forbearance was the highest virtue of all. Bhima was burning with impatience to attack and kill Duryodhana immediately and win back the kingdom. He thought it unworthy of warriors to continue to dwell tamely in the forest. Bhima said to Yudhisthira,
"You speak like those who repeat Vedic mantras and are satisfied with the sound of the words, though they don't know what they mean. Your intellect has become confused. You are born as a warrior, and yet you do not think or behave like one. You have become a Brahmin by temperament. You know the scriptures enjoin on a warrior sternness and enterprise. We should not let the wicked sons of Dhritarashtra have their way. Vain is the birth of a warrior who does not conquer his deceitful enemies. This is my opinion, and to me, if we go to hell by killing a deceitful foe, such hell will be heaven. Your tolerance burns us worse than fire. It scorches Arjuna and myself day and night, making us sleepless." "Those miscreants have seized our kingdom by fraud and are enjoying it while you lie lazy like a gorged python. You say that we should abide by our promise? How can the world-renowned Arjuna live incognito? Can the Himalayas be hidden under a handful of grass? How can the lion-hearted Arjuna, Nakula, and Sahadev live in hiding? Can the famous Draupadi walk about unrecognized by others? Even if we do these impossible things, the son of Dhritarashtra will find out through his spies. Hence, this promise of ours is impossible to perform and has been put on us merely to thrust us out again for another 13 years. The scriptures too support me when I say that a filched promise is no promise. A handful of grass thrown to a tired bull ought to be enough as expiation for breaking such a promise. You should resolve to kill our enemies immediately. There's no higher duty for a Kshatriya."
Bhima was never tired of pressing his view. Draupadi also would refer to the dishonor she had suffered at the hands of Duryodhan, Karna, and Dusasan, and would quote authorities from the scriptures that would give Yudhisthira anxiety to think. He would sometimes answer with trite maxims of politics and refer to the relative strength of the parties, saying,
"Our enemy has such adherents as Bhurishravas, Bhishma, Drona, Karna, and Ashwatthama. Duryodhan and his brothers are expert in warfare. Many feudatory princes as well as mighty kings are now on their side. Bhishma and Drona, indeed, have no respect for Duryodhan's character, but will not give him up and are prepared to sacrifice their lives on his side in the battlefield. Karna is a brave and skillful fighter, well versed in the use of all the weapons. The course of war is unpredictable and success is uncertain. There is no use in being hasty."
Thus Yudhisthira managed with difficulty to restrain the impatience of the younger Pandavas. Later, as advised by Vyas, Arjun went to the Himalayas to practice austerities for the purpose of getting new weapons from the gods. Arjun took leave of his brothers and went to Draupadi to bid her farewell. He said,
"O Arjuna, may you prosper in your mission. May God give you all that Kunti Devi, your mother, hoped and wished for when you were born. The happiness, life, honor, and prosperity of us all depend on you. Return after acquiring your new weapons."
And thus Draupadi sent him forth with auspicious words. Arjun walked through dense forests and reached the mountains of Indrakila, where he met an old Brahmin priest. The ascetic smiled and spoke affectionately to Arjun.
"Child, you are clad in armor and carry weapons. Who are you? Weapons are of no use here. What do you seek in this garb of a kshatriya, in this abode of ascetics and saints who have conquered anger and passion?"
This was Indra speaking, the king of gods, who came to have the pleasure of meeting his son. Arjun bowed to his disguised father and said,
"I seek arms. Bless me, O father, with weapons."
Indra replied that there was no use of weapons, but he should ask for pleasures or seek to go to higher worlds for enjoyment. Arjun answered,
"O king of gods, I do not seek pleasures of higher worlds. I have come here after leaving my brothers in the forest. I want only weapons."
Indra, the thousand-eyed, replied,
"If you be blessed by the vision of Lord Shiva and obtain his grace, you will receive divine weapons. Do penance unto Shiva."
Thus saying, Indra disappeared. Then Arjun went to the Himalayas and did penance to obtain the grace of Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva, under the guise of a hunter and accompanied by his divine spouse Uma Devi, entered the forest in pursuit of game. The chase grew fast and furious, and presently a wild boar started charging Arjun, who shot an arrow into it with his Gandiva bow at the same moment that the hunter Shiva transfixed it with a shaft from his bow, Pinaka. Arjun shouted in a loud voice,
"Who are you? Why are you wandering in this forest with your wife? How dare you shoot at the game I had aimed at?"
The hunter replied as though in contempt,
"This forest full of game belongs to us who live in it. You do not look tough enough to be a forester. Your limbs and bearing bespeak a soft, luxurious life. It's rather for me to ask what you are doing here."
He also added that it was his shaft that had killed the boar, and that if Arjun thought differently, he was welcome to fight about it. Nothing could please Arjun better. He jumped up and showered snake-like arrows at Shiva. To his amazement, They seemed to have no effect on the hunter and fell back hurtless like storm-driven rain from a mountain peak. When he had no more arrows, he began to strike Shiva with his bow. But the hunter seemed not to heed it and wrenched with ease the bow out of Arjun's hands and burst into laughter. Arjun, who had been disarmed with humiliating ease by one who seemed an ordinary hunter of the forest, was struck with amazement. Although mounting to doubt, but nothing daunted, he drew his sword and continued the combat. The sword was shivered into pieces by the hunter's adamantine frame. There was now nothing to do but to grapple with the formidable unknown, but here again he was outmatched. The hunter caught him in an iron clasp so close that Arjun was quite helpless. Worsted and overmastered, Arjun humbly sought divine aid and meditated on Shiva. And as he did so, a light broke in on his troubled mind, and at once he knew who the hunter really was. He fell at the feet of the Lord, and in a broken voice of repentance and adoration, he prayed for forgiveness.
"I forgive you,"
said Shiva smilingly, and gave him back his Gandiva bow, as well as the other weapons of which he had been deprived. He also bestowed on Arjun the marvelous Pushpata weapon. Arjuna's body, battered in the unequal combat, was made whole and perfect by the divine touch of the god, and became a hundredfold stronger and more brilliant than before.
"Go to heaven and render dutifully respect to your father Indra,"
said Shiva, and vanished from view like the setting sun. Arjun was overcome with joy and exclaimed,
"Have I really seen Lord Shiva face to face? And have I been blessed with his divine touch? What more do I need?"
At that moment, Matali, the charioteer of Indra, came there with his chariot and took Arjun to the kingdom of heaven, the highest material realm. Balaram and Krishna once again came with their retinue to the abode of the Pandavas in the forest. Deeply distressed by what he saw, Balaram said to Krishna,
"O Krishna, it would seem that virtue and wickedness bear contrary fruit in this life. For see, the wicked Duryodhan is ruling his kingdom, clad in silk and gold, while the virtuous Yudhisthira lives in the forest, wearing the bark of trees. Seeing such unmerited prosperity and, on the other hand, undeserved privation, men have lost their faith in God. The praise of virtue in the scriptures seems mere word jugglery when we see the actual results of good and evil in this world. How will Dhritarashtra justify his conduct and defend himself when he is face to face with a god of death and justice? Even the mountains and the earth will weep at the sight of the blameless Pandavas living in the forest with the blessed Draupadi, who was born from the sacrificial fire."
Satyaki, who was seated nearby, told Lord Balaram that this was no time for lamenting. Should they wait till Yudhisthira asked them to do their duty by the Pandavas? While they and Krishna and all other relations were living, why should the Pandavas waste their precious years in the forest? Let them collect their forces and attack Duryodhan. With the army of the Vrishnis, they were surely strong enough to destroy the Kauravas. Let them kill Duryodhan and his adherents in the battlefield and hand over the kingdom to Abhimanyu if the Pandavas wished to keep their word and stay in the forest. This was good for them and befitting men of valor. Lord Krishna, who was listening carefully to this speech, said,
"What you say is true, but the Pandavas would not like to receive from the hands of others what they have not won by their own efforts. Draupadi, for one, born of a heroic race as she is, would not hear of it. Yudhisthira will never give up the path of righteousness for love or fear. When the stipulated period of exile is over, the kings of Panchala, Kekaya, and Chedi and ourselves will unite our forces to help the Pandavas to conquer their enemies.
Yudhisthira was delighted at these words of Sri Krishna. Lord Krishna knows my mind, he said, and truth is greater than power or prosperity, and has to be guarded at all costs, and not the kingdom. When he wants us to fight, he shall find us ready. The heroes of the Vrishni race may now return with certainty that we shall meet again when the time is ripe. And with these words, Yudhisthira gave them leave to return. Arjun was still away in the Himalayas, and Bhima's anxiety and impatience became well nigh insupportable. He said to Yudhisthira,
"You know that our life depends on Arjuna. He's been very long away now, and we have no news of him. If he should be lost to us, then neither the king of Panchala, nor Satyaki, nor even Sri Krishna can save us. And I, for one, cannot survive that loss. All this we owe to that mad game of dice. Our sorrows and sufferings, as well as the growing strength of our foes. To be living in the forest is not a duty enjoined on a Kshatriya. We should immediately recall Arjuna and wage war with the sons of Dhritarashtra with the help of Sri Krishna. I shall be satisfied only when the wicked Sakuni, Karna, and Duryodhana are killed. After this clear duty is done, you may, if you like, return to the forest and live a life of asceticism. It's not a sin to kill by stratagem an enemy who has resorted to stratagem. I have heard that the Antavana Veda has incantations which can compress time and reduce its span. If we could, by such means, squeeze 13 years into 13 days, we would be perfectly justified in doing so. And you will permit me on the 14th day to kill Duryodhana."
Hearing these words of Bhima, Yudhisthira affectionately embraced him and sought to restrain his impetuosity, assuring his brother that as soon as the period of 13 years was over, Arjun, the hero with the Gandiva bow, and he, Bhima, would fight and kill Duryodhana. But he should be patient till then. While the sorrow-stricken brothers were thus engaged in debate, the great sage, Brihaswad, came to the hermitage of the Pandavas and was received with the customary honors. After a while, Yudhisthira said to him,
"Revered sage, our deceitful enemies drew us into this game of dice and cheated us of our kingdom and riches, and then drove my heroic brothers, as well as our wife and myself, to the forest. Arjuna, who left us a long time ago to get divine weapons, has not returned as yet, and we miss him very seriously. Will he return with divine arms, and when will he be back? Surely never was there in this world a man who suffered so much sorrow as myself."
The great sage replied that he should not let his mind dwell on sorrow. Arjuna would return with divine weapons, and he would conquer his enemies in the fitness of time. To say that there was no one in this world who was as unfortunate as he was, that was not true, though everyone, tried by adversity, is inclined to claim preeminence in sorrow, because things felt are more than things heard or seen. Then the sage related a story.
"Have you heard of King Nala of Nishada? He suffered more sorrows than yourself, even in the forest. He was deceived by Pushkar at a game of dice also. He lost his wealth and kingdom and had to go in exile to the forest. Less fortunate than you by far, he had not with him his brothers or Brahmins. The influence of Kali, the spirit of the dark age, deprived him of his discrimination and good sense, and not knowing what he was doing, he deserted even his own wife, who had come along with him. He began wandering about in that forest, solitary and almost mad, for years and years and years. Now, Yudhisthira, compare your state with his. You have the company of your heroic brothers and devoted wife, and you're supported by a few learned Brahmins in your adversity. Your mind is sound and steady. Self-pity's natural, but you're really not so badly off.
The sage then narrated the life of King Nala, concluding with these words.
Oh, Pandava, Nala was tried by sorrows more agonizing than yours. Yet he triumphed over them all, and his life ended happily. You have the advantages of unclouded intellect and the society of your nearest and dearest. You spend much of your time in exalted contemplation of religion and in holy discourses with the Brahmins who are learned in the Vedas and Vedantas. Bear your trials and tribulations with courage, for they are the lot of man and not unique to you.
Thus did the sage Brihadaswa console Yudhisthira. Yudhisthira bore his 13 years of exile with patience and fortitude, and indeed conquered his enemies at the fulfillment of his vow.
You've been listening to Stories from the Mahabharata, the celebrated history of Greater India. Compiled by the great sage Vyas many thousands of years ago, Mahabharata is written in the Sanskrit language in verse form and is here adapted for radio and brought to you by Radio Krishna. Tune in again for our next presentation of Stories from the Mahabharata.